The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Yeah, very pleasant. Good afternoon. Welcome. We are midway through October, and every Monday we don't think it can get any crazier. Last week it was Alabama losing. Today, where do we begin? Well, there are a lot of choices, and none of them are all that great. Let's get going right now with some headlines. And it's all over for Coach O. He will coach the remainder of the season, but no more, as Coach O is let go after a week of turmoil, after really a season of turmoil, after two seasons of spiraling downhill, after Joe Burrow took off after hoisting the national championship trophy. Last night, everyone talked in BR.
Man, 2019, what a magical run. But you know why? Because of the players. We had great players, and we had great coaches here. The players make this program, and you're able to recruit great players here at LSU. But I knew we had to sustain that momentum, and we had to sustain that standard. And I know that the last 2 years hasn't been the standard of LSU. So when he came and talked to me after the Kentucky game, I knew that it was time. And I understand that. I understand the expectations of LSU. And I invited myself, and we did not meet him the last 2 years. I'm honored that I got to be the head coach at LSU. This administration has treated me with class, with dignity. The whole time that I've been here, they've given me everything that we needed to have success. I met with the players today. It's the first time that I get to talk to the players before I wanted to talk to you. But I am happy that I can be the coach of the LSU Tigers towards the end of the season. And I promise you this, we're not going to blink. I'm glad we beat Florida. Tomorrow's going to be Tell the Truth Monday, and we're going to be on to Ole Miss. And I'm going to take it one day at a time. But I'm always going to appreciate my time here. I have no regrets.
Thought last year on Tell the Truth Monday, he told us he didn't know anything about his status, and now he tells us that he talked to the AD after the Kentucky. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Of course, this is the timeline on Coach O, named interim coach in 2016 after Les Miles was fired. Of course, Burrow transfers. They win the title. He's named National Coach of the Year, gets a big contract raise, and then it all starts spiraling downhill. The Athletic headline, and we'll talk to the author of this article. He lost track of who he was. Ed Orgeron's fall. And if you have not read this, we will tell you what you missed. And it's quite an extraordinary tale. Not exactly what you hear from some of the talking heads about Coach O's stay in Baton Rouge. Meanwhile, what happened to the Gators? Dan Mullen, how about you telling the truth on Monday? What's going on down there? Another ugly loss. Gators have a bye week. And then they have Georgia. Speaking of ugly, how about the scene in Knoxville after a fantastic evening, one of the most exciting in many, many years in Big Orange Country? They lose the game, and then some in the audience lose their cool, throwing things on the field, protesting the officiating, throwing golf balls at Lane Kiffin. It was a melee, and the SEC just moments ago has issued the following. They have fined Tennessee $250,000, required to use all available resources to identify individuals who threw the objects, review and update game management procedures and alcohol availability policies. They do sell beer at Neyland, and provide a report to the conference office to try to prevent future incidents. What else can you say? I certainly understand in a stadium with more than 100,000 people, this was a very small percentage. However, it's also hard to shy away from the fact that it was an ugly scene that has been disseminated not only in the sports world. I saw it yesterday on the Today Show. I saw it today on the CBS network. And quite frankly, whether Tennessee fans feel like they're being treated fairly or not, that school has received an ugly black eye as a result of all of this. There were some good things on the field Saturday. How about them Dogs? They looked the part in knocking off Kentucky in a really dominant game. The score really doesn't quite tell the story. But Dogs gave up a few more points than usual, a late touchdown. They call it in Vegas a backdoor cover. But still, this defense has been nothing short of spectacular this year. Brody Miller, who wrote one of the best pieces we have seen in a long time in the Athletics, will join us in a minute. Kyra LZ, the basketball coach at Kentucky. Yeah, the basketball season is about to begin. McElroy will join us with his take on the weekend. The TOL guys and Kermit Davis. And your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Let's start with Dwayne in Georgia. Hello, Dwayne. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. I just wanted to say this about Coach O. I've called in a couple times. I'm blind. I've never seen the guy, but I like him just by what I hear. But I understand what LSU has to go do. Personally, I wish that he would have had one more year, but I understand what they had to do and what's taking place. But I do like the guy. I just hope that things go well for him, that he might find something else down the road somewhere else.
Well, thank you for the call, Dwayne, and you be well. Take care of yourself. Ken is up next. Hey, Ken, go right ahead.
Two things. First of all, I discovered your Sunday morning podcast with Matt Barry, and I enjoy it tremendously.
Oh, thanks, Ken.
Matter of fact, I was subscribing to College Football Live, and they teased me with it a couple of weeks, and I thought, oh, this is a brand new feature of College Football Live, yay! And then they took it away, and they took it away just in time for the Bama crash, and I thought, dang it, I want to hear what Paul says. So I found out what I scrolled through, and I found you guys, and I've been catching up on my Paul and Matt homework, and so I got to hear the reaction to the
Matt and I do that every Sunday morning. Yesterday, in full disclosure, we had completed it, and then the Ogeron news breaks, so lunch had to wait.
Yeah, I was on top of that, and I felt sorry for Ed Ogeron to start with, because I thought, never has a championship cost a football coach so much, because he lost two of the best offensive and defensive minds in college football, and he lost all those players. And I thought, that's hard to rebound from. But then I found out about all the off-the-field behavior, and I thought, yeah, man. But Paul Harvey said several years ago, a number of years ago, when he was still had his Paul Harvey News and Comment, he said, power is one of the greatest aphrodisiacs, and I guess that's what happened. The guy just lost control of
our next guest is going to probably explain it better than anyone else, and I certainly understand the affection that everyone has for Coach O, but there was a lot more to the story than I think most of us ever heard, as you well know.
Yes. And I found out yesterday, thanks to the podcast, and I was just shocked. I could tell by the way Ed talked that he was a nice guy, but he probably wasn't, a Rhodes Scholar, and I'm trying to be kind.
No.
But his heart was in there. I felt like his heart was in the right place until I found out that his focus had somehow gone askew. And it's a shame, because he had so much going for him. Louisiana boy, made good. And then he just crashed and burned. And it's kind of sad to see when somebody, can't, like Casey Kasem used to say, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. And Ed lost control of his feet.
And by the way, Ken, it is very easy to do. And there are, countless plays from Shakespeare or verses in the Bible that describe it very, very well. We will take a break and find out what exactly caused that epic fall from grace for Ed Ogeron. If you have not heard about this article, you're going to hear the author of it in just a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We have been listening to the dueling statements coming out of LSU from Coach O and Scott Woodward, and everything's copacetic, right? Just not happy with the direction. Moving on, but Coach O supports that decision, and here's $17.9 million. Let's get to what really went down in Baton Rouge, and nobody has explained it better than our next guest. He is Brody Miller from The Athletic, who wrote an epic piece yesterday as the rumors were bouncing around that Coach O was heading to the unemployment line, or at least for at the end of the season. Brody joins us now. Brody, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. Good afternoon, and take us through what your reporting found for the real reasons why Coach O is gone at the end of the season. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, as always, Paul. I think it's always worth leading with the fact that, quite frankly, Ed Orgeron is not going to be LSU's coach any longer because he didn't win enough games. You have to start there. Anything else is probably a little disingenuous. But, you know as well as I that if you have other messiness going on, but you're winning, the way people treat that goes a little differently. But, yeah, I think so much of the story of the last 2 years is how, a guy who, in my opinion, earned that national title. I know a lot of people try to, after the fact, say it was luck and all these things. I think Ed Orgeron earned that national title, and I think in the 2 years since, you kind of saw an epic recipe of kind of what happens when a guy, who already has a bit of a volatile, up and down career, reaches the height of his, profession right as a pandemic hits and right as he's going through a divorce. And I think he's just to replace his entire staff and team, and I just don't think he handled that entire situation perfectly. I think he would probably say that. I think his single life created some messiness. I think the Title IX scandal at LSU absolutely created some messiness. And then you add in, some troubled hires, quite frankly, and losing the locker room due to cultural issues, due to some political comments, and then on top of that, just not on field results and players not developing like they used to. I think as one source in the story put it, if 2019 was a perfect storm of everything going right, I think the last 2 years have been a perfect storm of everything kind of going wrong there, absolutely. So a lot of stuff there.
Brody, some of the stuff we thought we knew about, some of the stuff was speculated. Let me stay on the field in the locker room first, and then we'll go off, because I don't want to bury the lead here. What you and I both know, for all these indiscretions or alleged issues, Ed Orgeron would still be there right now if he were undefeated. So let's not act like winning doesn't trump everything else. So you mentioned the George – well, you didn't mention it, but you're alluding to what happened a year ago. Right after the George Floyd incident, there were a million stories coming out of Baton Rouge that he had lost the locker room. He had gone on Fox News. He had supported President Trump, who they appeared to be fairly close, which is certainly his prerogative. Can you pick up that story right there and tell us what you learned?
Yeah, I mean, that one's a tricky situation because, quite frankly, I think I'd be the first to tell you, Ed Orgeron is a pretty apolitical person. He is. And, he was doing a lot of PSA stuff during the pandemic. He was on Fox News, and he basically was asked about President Trump, and because President Trump was good to him, at the White House when they won the title, he said, "I love President Trump. I think he's doing a great job." And I think that upset a very large portion of a majority black roster back at LSU. And I think there was a lot of people kind of really upset with that. And that would have been one thing, but then it kind of happened more behind the scenes. And then when that protest happens after George Floyd and after teams across the country are protesting, not just LSU, most coaches went out, Lincoln Riley went and marched with his team, for example. Nick Saban went and marched with his team, and Orgeron did not do that, and he handled that situation. I think he's admitted multiple times, he did not handle that situation well. Then there was a meeting with most of the roster, you know, during that protest when he finally went and met them. And I think that left a lot of people more upset after he tried to cool things down. And I think that really opened up the situation for there on out, where that locker room was disconnected. A lot of players didn't want to play for him anymore at that point. And, you know, I'm not saying that's why they went 5-5 in 2020, but it certainly didn't help, that's for sure.
Brody Miller with us. Brody, the coaching hires have been well documented. Some of the things that I learned in your article have not been reported until now. And it goes down a road that I think we all would prefer not to go down, but in this case, I think it's unavoidable. Ed Ogeron had been married for, I think, 23 years. I've met his wife. You knew her. She went through a very difficult illness a couple of years ago, and he stood up for her, and so did everyone else, just like she had supported him when he battled his demons. And as you tell in the story, I'm going to let you tell it. From the championship night on, it came apart quickly, and then rumors all over town started surfacing.
Yeah, and I'll lead by saying I'm not trying to dunk on any coach for having a personal life. It's not my job and not something I ever in a million years want to do, like you said. But yeah, I think after the championship, suddenly, you know, a guy who had been, you know, pretty, you know, private and a little more quiet life for 23 years is suddenly the most popular guy in the state, and he's single. And, you know, I think he enjoyed it, and hey, I don't care. But and most people in the program I spoke to, they don't have a problem with it, but there created some messiness. You know, there were women being brought around the LSU facility and things like that, and there was just a different, I don't know, I'm not saying he didn't care about football most, but there was just kind of a different priority, you know, in how he handled things. And then there was just messiness in certain situations. As in the story, there's a instance with an exchange with the wife of I'll just put it as a high-ranking LSU official. And again, wasn't something horrific he did, but it's just one more situation where he was hitting on her, and that created a messier situation for him. And that's not why he's fired, like you and I said, but it just added to a general messiness for these last 2 years when you compile, you know, that noise going off the field, the locker room issues, and the on-field results. It really, like, I always kind of want to make that clear. That's not why he lost his job, but it's certainly just it's something that contributed to, I think, how things went downhill the last 2 years.
Brody, rightly or wrongly, the one thing I've heard from friends who read your article was just that scene. And could I ask you to explain it? Because I know isolated, it may not have been that important, but you obviously and your editors felt it was important enough to include in your piece. And that's the scene where Coach O meets a woman, I think you wrote, at a gas station.
Yes. So, yeah, I've heard different versions of the story, and it's a tricky thing, but I think there was an interaction with a woman at a gas station. I believe Ed Ogeron got some flirty vibes from her, and, you know, he picked up on it and probably, you know, hit on her a little bit. And again, I don't think he by any means did anything awful there, but it was just, you know, it was the wife of a person who matters at LSU. And we thought it was important just to explain kind of the, and again, I keep using this
he was talking to her about working out. And yeah. I believe, you stop me if I'm misquoting the article that you wrote, but he said something like, you know, why don't we work out together? And I believe she responded that she was married, and I think she was also pregnant. And he responded, why does that matter?
Yes, correct. That is the version of that story I have heard, is that, yeah, it was kind of, why don't we work out together? And she kind of tried to put him off, and he said, why does that matter? Yes, that is the version I was told. And then that obviously went back to the person's husband and kind of floated up the ranks at LSU.
Now, I have a feeling, you tell me, you told that story because it was representative of a lot of negativity down there. The Instagram post or whatever post it was that everyone has been talking about for a year or whenever it came out. Why did these things catch up to him, or was it because he was losing? You had Title IX lawsuits. You had issues off the field. Explain how it all came together to ultimately bring him down.
Yeah, and I apologize if I'm tiptoeing or any of this. I'm just trying not to, you know, slander somebody here. But, yeah, I think it was something where, yes, the losing is really what the root of this, but it was just a consistent theme. And in 2020 a little bit, but I think it grew even more in 2021 where, yeah, Ed Ogeron was single and there were photos of him with women kind of popping up, you know, often, or the day before the UCLA game, there was another one and things like that. And then there, you know, women coming by the LSU facilities and things like that. And it's like, and you said this earlier, it's not like any of these things in a vacuum or some terrible thing, but it just kind of added to the goodwill he was losing, I think is a good way to put it. And I think Scott Woodward's a guy who would rather avoid messes like that to some extent. And it just, I think it was just more a compounding thing of that going on while the on-field results are not exactly going great. And you have a Title IX scandal behind the scenes, which they shouldn't be connected, but it's one more thing. And yeah, I just think it, it killed the goodwill a little bit.
Finally, Brody, the decision to give him his full buyout, I think it was his full buyout, maybe they owed him more, I don't know. But secondly, sure. to let him finish the season, that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, and I was quite surprised by that to some extent. You know, I think there was a little bit of, and Scott Woodward in his press conference yesterday was very thankful for Ed Ogeron and went out of his way to say it. And, you know, you talk to certain administrators, you know, this morning, they'll still tell you they have a lot of love for Ed Ogeron. I don't think this breakup was necessarily a vicious one in some ways. I think it was, this guy brought us a title, he's a Louisiana guy, and they're not trying to ruin his life or anything like that. So I think there was some concern over who the interim coach would be, for example. How can they keep things as stable as they can? And I think they felt that was the best solution to kind of keep him on. And Ogeron's going to keep these guys playing, you know, maybe make less mistakes than some other people. And shoot, he even said he's still recruiting for them. He talked to two recruits yesterday, which is a little surprising. So I think it's going to be a kind of awkward few weeks. There's no doubt about that. Probably a little awkward for me too. But yeah, it is kind of an unprecedented thing. And I am really intrigued to see how this goes, because you're going to have staff members looking for jobs. The whole staff's going to be looking for new places to go. Players are unsure of their future. It is going to be a little weird, but it could go both ways.
Some have said, well, maybe they'll play hard for him. But on the other hand, you've already seen some players injured, and you know better than I do exactly to the extent of their injuries. But there's a lot of suspicion connected with a few of them. What reason do any of us have to believe that these guys are going to play harder for him now when they haven't really been playing that hard until now?
Yeah, no, I think it's a very valid question. You know, I'm not going to speak on each player's you know, drive or anything like that, but it's real. I mean, there's been frustration with him and things like that. You are seeing players, you know, the injuries are real, but maybe the decision to have surgery at the time they had it, you know, is telling, you know, to get things handled right away, as I think you're probably alluding to. And they're playing without, yeah, they're four best players, you could argue. And, you know, I don't know, I want to say 8-10 starters are pretty much out at this point. It's a pretty depleted team. So I don't know if they're going to really – I think Ed Ogeron made a comment today at his press conference that basically said some variation of, I think the players are playing a little freer right now, that this isn't hovering over them, that it's been hovering over them for, you know, 5 weeks, and they're happy to be out of that. And hey, there might be some truth to that for sure, but I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, that it might actually lead to a slightly more awkward situation.
Brody, before, while you were talking, Jimbo Fisher in College Station did the usual, I'm happy where I am, I have a job, I have no intention of ever leaving. He's flirted with that school countless times. Absolutely. As we all know. So what does the list legitimately look like in terms of who could possibly take his place?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jimbo's absolutely very high on the list. I just, you know, most of what we've heard but has been that it's relatively unlikely right now. It doesn't seem like something that is, you know, imminent to happen. I wouldn't put my money on Jimbo Fisher being LSU's next coach, but he's absolutely on the list. You can't deny him and Scott Woodward's long-tenured relationship and all that. So it's something, and of course he can't leave at no cost. But I think the list does involve some pretty big names, and you know Scott Woodward as well, that he likes going for some big fish. He is going to look at your James Franklins of the world, your Lane Kiffins, even your Lincoln Rileys, and you know, my colleague Bruce Feldman reported yesterday that, you know, he's going to make Dabo Swinney say no. You know, he is going to go for the biggest fish, and LSU is one of the handful of jobs that has proven you can win a national title. So I would imagine he's going to get at least one of those big fish. But if you work way down the line a little bit, I think there's a lot of interest in Mel Tucker. You know, by certain people in that university would very much like Mel Tucker to be a heavy candidate. And I think Billy Napier is somebody who might be a little further down the list, but it's certainly somebody they need to look at. So with Scott Woodward, I think you have to assume he's going to go for those big fish first, but we'll see if they really want it.
Brody, thank you. Phenomenal story yesterday. We look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Oh, thank you as always, Paul. Take care.
Brody Miller really wrote an epic piece, and you heard him describe it a minute ago. As I mentioned, Jimbo Fisher naturally asked about this moments ago in College Station.
So I guess I'll cut to the chase. Do you have any interest in the LSU job?
No, listen, I am. I'm going to say this right now. It's in October right now. I love being here. This is the job I wanted. I'm being here. I got a great contract. I have an unbelievable chancellor. I have an unbelievable president, an unbelievable AD. That we're building something. We're recruiting great players. I really believe we're on the process of building something great. I plan on being here and fulfilling this contract and doing everything. My family has roots here. I got ranches here. I hunt here. I love everything about this place. There's nothing going on there. There's nothing happening there. And I don't be disrespectful to anybody else. I coached there. It was a great place. We won national championships. It is one of the best, best places in America. It's a wonderful place. I love being an A&M, and I plan on being an A&M here and fulfilling my whole contract. I love everything about this place. And let me tell you something else. And the way this place has embraced me and my family, and including our foundation, the things that are going on with our foundation, the way the people have embraced it, the way people have done everything here in College Station. I love everything about the people here, the administration here, and everybody in charge here, and the people who run this organization. And I love it here.
Down front.
No, that's about it. I don't know how else I can say it.
What did Shakespeare say? Anyway, well, more on that later. Let's continue with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back. Some comments here from Josh Heupel about the end of the Ole Miss-Tennessee game. We'll get back to your calls right now. Plenty of time to join us this afternoon at 855-242-7285. John is in Louisville. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. What a great interview with Brody. I think you covered it from soup to nuts. Certainly, Leo won't be happy, but I think it was one of your best interviews.
Thank you.
And love the Friday show when you're on campus. You lose your tie and just relax and have all those great local guests. But the finale with Larry and Cat Daddy was phenomenal. It was a good cap to a show.
It was a fun show. I have to give credit to Mike Griffith. I thought his stand-up act could have gone to Broadway, even though he was playing Athens GA.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, Mike Griffith. I think your other caller, Jim, called him a drama queen, although I was thinking to myself, who's calling the kettle black? But I think a better word for Mike Griffith is paradoxical. I mean, early in the season, he's saying, well, this guy's faster than a speeding bullet. This one can leap a tall building. And then you ask, well, how's George going to do this year? Well, I was afraid you asked me that. Then later in the season, he said, well, I think they'll win this game. And then later in the conversation, he says, by 21 points. And now he's throwing shade on different coaches. Well, Mullen's a great coach, but he's no Urban Meyer. It just seems he loses his credibility as he goes back and forth. What do you think?
Well, I hear you loud and clear. I'm probably more intrigued by the comedic value of what he says. So, hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Keith is up next in Fort Worth. Hello, Keith.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
Well, thank you.
Hey. I've been a lifelong Paul fan. Lived in Shreveport when you wrote there. Listened to you back in Birmingham. Hadn't always agreed with everything you said, but have always respected, especially when you're a journalist. I felt like you really went to get the facts before you just started a bunch of rumors or anything like that. I got to tell you, I was disappointed with that whole deal with Brody Miller. I mean, you guys focused on a piece of his story that, by his own admission, at least three times when he was talking to you, was strictly hearsay. He said he got the story from three or four different people. There was no fact. And so you're assassinating a man's character on a hearsay story so The Athletic can get people to sign up and read Brody Miller. And that's just that was not, at least as I understood it, the Paul Feinbaum I knew when he wrote. I mean, it was always based on fact. And just to trash Coach O with a bunch of hearsay stuff, is he a saint? Absolutely not. Does he have a personal life most of us wish we didn't have? Probably so. But man, why have we gotten to this point where we just trash people to justify selling subscriptions or getting viewers? It's a sad state of affairs, man.
Okay, thank you for all your kind comments until the last one. Well, let me say one thing. I didn't write the article. I just interviewed the host, the person who did. He's not the only one who's reporting that. And I would agree with you. The Athletic can be nauseating when it comes to subscriptions. I get tired of being asked every time I click one of those articles whether I want a 50% off subscription, even though I already have one. But part of the reason I think that story was important was that's played a role in Coach O's dismissal. And I think it played a very big role. And I will admit to you, I cringed when I asked him about the interlude with the woman. But that story ended up being a factor, not that one, but that one multiplied by others that Scott Woodward heard. And I think if there had not been a single criticism of Coach O off the field, I think if there had not been the Title IX lawsuits, if there not had been his peripheral involvement in some of the things that happened previously, he would not have been fired.
Well, I don't disagree with you. All I'm saying is it seems like when we get somebody down, we take what we know as fact, and then we look for everything else we can throw in there, whether we know it's fact or not.
Keith, I'll say one more thing to you, if I could. I did find it ironic yesterday that as the story was breaking, all these other stories came out like they had been sitting there ready to be disseminated for weeks. And you know where I come from, the idea of writing those stories in the moment and not waiting till something's over, and that I will completely agree with you on that. And I know I'm blaming myself in the process, but that's okay. I can look at myself and I try to examine myself when it comes to things like that. And that's not something that's not a road we normally go down. But I think when you take Ed Ogeron completely in the complete person, those are the factors that I think led to his demise. And it has nothing to do with a divorce. Sadly, a lot of people go through that. But it's how you handle yourself when you are the most visible person in the state. We'll take a break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we're back, and great to have all of you with us. So let's check out with Richard, who is up next in Florida. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Quite well. Thank you.
Good. Hey, listen, long-time listener. I've been a Gator fan from Florida my whole life, and my biggest knock on Coach Ballin is basically, first of all, we got to start recruiting better. We're terrible in recruiting ever since he's been there. number one. Number two, we got to get rid of that Todd Grantham. We got inherited him from Georgia, and he just has not done anything for Florida Gators, nothing. And number three, you're going to have to start that Richardson guy, AR-15. And Mullen's been too stubborn. He keeps Jones in there, starts Jones, and we're going to end up losing this kid. He's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen in the last 50 years I've been watching the Gators. I don't want him to go to the portal and transfer out, because he knows he should be starting quarterback, and all the Gator fans know it too. And Coach McElwain, we had a few years ago, if you remember, he let Will Grier go, which is the biggest mistake he ever made. Look what Will Grier did up there in, where'd he go, to Virginia? West Virginia.
Right.
So my big thing is that he's going to have to stop being so so stubborn and let this kid play. It's the only way we're going to win. If we don't – if we start the
yeah, I thought it was interesting what AR-15 said after the game, and then he clarified it once it went viral. But you do have to wonder what he meant when he said what he did. Hey, thank you very, very much for the call. Let's continue. Shannon is up next in Georgia. Hello, Shannon.
Hey, Paul, let's let Richards from Florida know that they didn't inherit Mullen from Georgia. Mullen left Georgia, went to Louisville, then to Mississippi State. We hooked up with Mullen and then to Florida. So
right.
They didn't inherit
good point.
Grantham. Paul, I think one of the biggest things that Brody Miller said was that if Ed O had been winning at LSU, none of that would have been a problem. Would you agree with that? Winning solved
there's
a lot
no
of problems.
Question. I've seen countless people. And by the way, there are still some people out there coaching in college athletics who have no business being there, but they are winning and they are still there. And you don't need me to give you a clue to try to find out who they are. You can just do some basic investigative work and land on them. And some of the places they are quite interesting, by the way.
Well, and that's what I want to talk about. In Coach O's last 10 games at LSU, he was 6-4. In Dan Mullen's last 10 games at Florida, he's 4-6. With only two wins in the last eight over Power Five conferences.
One of them is Vanderbilt, by the way.
And the other is Tennessee.
Correct.
Exactly. And Dan Mullen is now 4-10 against Saban, Fisher, Smart, Coach O, and Stoops. Stoops being Stoops of Kentucky, obviously.
Correct.
My question is, Paul, is the standard of excellence higher at LSU than it is at Florida?
Well, what I found interesting too, and I mean somewhat facetiously, but you know, you get fired now after beating Florida. That usually would save your job, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, you would think so. And not only that, but Mullen has now lost LSU 2 years in a row where he's a double-digit favorite.
Oh yeah.
And in both times, LSU has been under the 60-player scholarship limit. I think they had 20 scholarship players not even on the field Saturday. And, Paul, it's not like LSU was doing something magically on offense. They ran the counter tray out of shotgun, I guess like every other play the entire game, and I think they probably just scored on it again. You know, I mean, Florida hadn't stopped it yet. So my question is, and I understand Coach O's got a lot of off-the-field issues, but Dan Mullen's not free from off-the-field issues. I mean, we've seen some really odd stuff out of Coach Mullen as it pertains
yeah,
to
I think
press
when
conferences
it comes,
and media
Shannon, I think when it comes to Dan Mullen, he totally different situation, but I think the better examination is going to be after Georgia. How does that game look? What's it, you know, does Mullen pull his usual big game, Dan, like he did against LSU 2 years ago, like he's often done against Georgia, or does Georgia just steamroll them? I think the rest of the season is going, Dan Mullen is not going to lose his job. He's way too secure, but he's putting himself with another 4-5 loss season in a very tenuous situation. We know he hasn't recruited at the same level as Kirby. Frankly, other than Saban, nobody has.
Well, I think if he loses, and I may be wrong on this, Paul, but I think if he loses to Georgia in 2 weeks, he's going to be eerily similar to Jim McElwain at Florida. Record, overall record, combined record, things of that nature.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. A lot to deal with in that first hour, especially the Ed O situation. Haven't dug too deep into what happened in Knoxville. I know there are a lot of differing opinions from Big Orange Country. I can assure you we've heard them. The commissioner and the SEC leveled a $250,000 fine against the university. More on that later.